Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon. The purpose of this podcast is to break stigmas, bring hope, and show that recovery is possible within our communities. Today on the show, we have Debbie. She is 62 years old, has been sober for 32 plus years, and lives in Dawson City. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
What was your early experience with alcohol? Was drinking normalized for you in the community when you were young?
I think it was. I started young, and young is like probably 13, 14. And being in Dawson City, I don't know if it's in any other communities. I was born and raised in Dawson, so I can't compare it to anything else, but it seems like it was normalized quite a bit. Even the jobs, they're men-orientated. And, of course, when you get a bunch of men together, it seems to be more drinking and more bars opening up, during the seasons and closing during the winter. But just about every activity was geared. They always had alcohol present.
Do you remember what it was like the first time you drank and what happened?
Geez, it's been a long time ago, but it wasn't a very good experience because even at my young age, you want to feel in control. I felt I didn't have no limits when I was younger. When I picked up the first time I started drinking, I really liked it. You could tell it changes you, and you feel more brave, and all the bad things that go with it. In the end, you're waking up and you're coming to, and it wasn't a very good feeling for me. But again, I really liked it.
Was there drinking in your family? Was it normalized in your household?
My mom and dad, they occasionally drank. But when they drank, it always started into be a happy thing, but it always ended, it wasn't a very good ending. Again, just the loss of control and all your feelings come out, and usually when you bottle things up for that long and then you have the alcohol present, it's not a good ending to it. And that's what I always remembered also, too.
From when you drank when you were 13, how did it go from there? Did you drink quite a bit throughout your youth and your early adulthood?
Mm-hmm. You don't plan to be addicted to any substance, but at that time, within this community, it was pretty much a given thing that you're going to venture down that road. So it was accessible. With the parents, a lot of the parents drank also too. So it was something that you were going to try. And of course we all tried it.
Were there any sober people that you knew then? Was there any sort of sober community in Dawson at that time?
I think so. Alcohol is a funny addiction because you're not, usually you can still, keep a job and you can still, perceive and be respectable and stuff. So it's almost allowed, I guess. And after thinking about it, I remember a few sober people within my life. It never dawned on me at that time, though, that there was a difference. It all comes to a point for me that it brought more anger out. And it didn't matter if it was, you'd celebrate a birthday or you're celebrating something. You always had an excuse to drink. There was always a reason to drink. And I had, all the reasons in the world. In the end, it wasn't with my anger. I always felt bad after, because I would bring a lot of violence into it, and a lot of words that I shouldn't have said to, you know, a lot of my friends and my parents and, you know, people that are close to you. So I always remember that it wasn't a very good connection to Oko.
When you decided to quit, were there any key factors or events that happened that propelled you to that decision?
I think it was my partner helped me make the decision, because he always stayed with me through, and there was a lot of reasons he should have left because of the alcohol and the anger that it brought to me, because I didn't really choose who to be angry at. I was angry at everybody, everything, and everyone else was to blame except myself. Of course, your partner is always always there. He was the reason why I could never ever figure out why he always stayed, because you play the games also too, is that you push people away. You don't want to be connected to people. And eventually you're all by yourself, and, you know, with a lot of regrets. It wasn't a good thing for me.
When you decided to make a change, did you seek any counseling or go up for treatment?
I think I did. I think I didn't go out for treatment. That was an option. I already had a child, and I had to work. You know, I had a lot of responsibilities within my community also too. So I reached out, and that's when we would have a lot of different workshops. And it worked for me, because they would be sporadic. You don't realize, you know, you wake up that day and you're gonna be sober. So you just keep walking that path, and you try to seek out people that have a different point of view than, you know, the people that you hang around with. I wanted to change. It took me several years to seek out workshops. My elders, my mom helped me a lot, because my mom had the connection to the other elders. So I started hanging around more closely with her. And then you start listening to their stories, and you want to try to break that connection, you know, that you allow it because your past generations allowed it. And I didn't want to, I wanted to be a good parent. I wanted my kids to look up to me, and I knew that if I was going down this road of, and it was an addiction, I would never think I was ever addicted to alcohol, but I think my family traits pushes and it brings it out more. Again, not realizing it when you're part of that addiction until you're out of it. So yeah.
After you had been sober for a while, did you ever feel like you were missing out, or if you were angry towards others that they were able to go out partying and you weren't able to anymore?
Not really, because that's part of it. Thank you. Once you start down that path that you want to make the change, that's part of the change that you have to let go, because it doesn't lead you down to, oh yeah, we had fun that night and everyone goes home and, you know, goes to work the next morning. It never worked out like that for me. It wasn't like, you know, on TV everything is good and everyone's clicking, you know, wine glasses and everything else. I couldn't stop. I couldn't just have one or two. And I picked up that quite early. I started to distinguish people that could do that and people that couldn't do that. And I knew right away I was not one of those people that could do that. And again, my husband helped me a lot to distinguish that. You know, let's go down for one or two. There's just no way I could even put it in my frame of mind of why I would want to do that. So you have to kind of break it down of what am I really missing? You know, certain bars, I can't be in those bars anymore. Because when you walk in there sober, you sure see something different than when you walk in. Drinking and stuff, it's just not good. It's very nasty, and it's almost like I can't even say it's, oh geez, that's bad, or that's dirty, or that's disgusting, and this and that. It's just almost pure down evil, you know. It's just you see it in a different light. And it's you know, majority of the people, you know, they switch and they change. And it's not the first or the second or the third drink. It's the drinks that follow that third drink. And you could see that, you know, people are more angrier or more, you know. And I do go in the bars every once in a while just to remind myself of why I don't drink. Because it comes out quite often, you know. High school students that I went to school with, they're still in that frame of mind that, remember when we went to school? I don't remember that anymore. So it's, you know, you've got to, then it helps you to figure out how further advanced you are, you know, changing your lifestyle and trying to live a good life. And I never do miss it, that's for sure.
When has your sobriety been tested the most, and what did you do to cope at that time?
And again, when you become sober, these questions that you're answering, you have to answer them, and you have to answer them very soon in your sobriety, because if you don't realize, because that's a choice, so you don't put yourself in that choice, and if you do, why are you choosing to do that? And it's just the simplest things, and it's things that you really enjoy. That's what I found out. Mine is a campfire, and because it's soothing and it's you know, it's beautiful and it's nice, and you're at ease. It'd be just really quite simple just to have that cold can of beer, and it's the noise of opening up a beer. It's the same noise of opening up a pop can, and it brings you right back to it. And again, for me, I've chosen to make that into a positive thing. So now I do it. I enjoy that campfire, and it's still beautiful, and it's relaxing, and it's good. But it's without that actually consuming alcohol. So I've made it into a positive thing instead of a negative.
How has addiction affected your family?
It has some, that's a hard question to answer. One example is I found that I had a sister in my 30s. And again, it's funny how you make choices of really looking at your life and trying to figure out, you know, all the reasons and whys and all the questions you ask yourself. And I found out I was raised with five brothers. I always wanted a sister. She had a lot of trauma within her life, and it could have been, you know, through all the foster homes and all that stuff, and the background story of her, and I really wanted to connect to her, but she was leading a life that I just couldn't fit into. And it was because she was, consuming alcohol. And when you become sober, it's you don't want to disrespect yourself anymore. You don't want to listen to the same old kind of thing. And part of my family is I can't be around people that, especially my family, that are drinking. It just brings too much of that past history up for me. And I don't want to go down that road anymore. So I choose not to. It's changed our, you know, when we have like different family events and stuff, I prefer not to be around. I mean, we still, you know, they still have alcohol. It's just I'm not part of that. You know, I come and go, and I choose not to be part of it. So, and you know, and that's my choice. They have their choices also too. And
how has your perspective on life, relationships, and personal growth evolved through your recovery journey, and what keeps you grounded?
Again, it's your family, your children, your partner, and it's your friends. And I think it's just the health of yourself. You know, and what I mean by health is the mental part is good. You know, you still have to deal with a lot of different hard things in life, even though you are sober. So it's right up front. Instead of alcohol, you just kind of try to forget about it, or it just becomes part of you. You know, with that anger issue, alcohol brought it on for me more faster. I still have anger. I still had anger issues. I still had, you know, very judgmental. I don't have patience. So you've got all these things, but you deal with it in a sober way, and you hopefully you get through it, you know, so it helps you deal with issues faster.
What is one piece of advice that you could share with someone struggling with addiction right now that might be listening?
You know, it's you always hear it one step at a time, and it is literally that. It's just do it your own way, and sometimes it's and it does take a long time. You know, when people say, "Well, it didn't take that long," it does. It's part of your you know, you have to take the whole scope of your life, and it's it takes a lifetime. You deal with it. It's part of you, so you deal with it, and you deal with it forever. But again, dealing with it is better than denying it, kind of thing. And alcohol denies you a lot of things. It takes away from you. When you choose not to, there's a lot of good things outweigh the bad things of it, that's for sure. You know, I don't think I would have lived past 30 if I did consume alcohol. You know, I would either be in jail or I would have died by now. And I didn't want to see that within myself and my children. You know, I wanted to live a good life and to share and to be part of the community, and especially with our youth to tell them that you know, you could venture down that road, because you can't tell them not to. But again, if they could get out of it faster, they would have a better life, because what they have to tolerate this day and age is, you know, it takes just one pill and they could pass away. So that, you know, that's what keeps me going also too, is that it's quite hopeful within our kids. And then you speak about it more also too, out in public and with your children, and you try to gear them, you know, away from it. There's more good things out there than, you know, drinking that night, not having a good weekend kind of thing.
With families slowly beginning to heal from the trauma of the past and cycles of addiction being broken, what do you think the future of Indigenous people in the Yukon will look like 20 years from now?
I'm quite hopeful in that area. Again, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff that's happening out there, and you see it. If people just start talking about it, communicating about it more, and this is just within families, and you're starting to see that more, and you're starting to see it advance more. Our youth are choosing not to drink at a younger age. You know, it took me in my 30s. Now you're starting to see youth within their 20s. So, you know, that I'm hopeful for that. When you do have children, that they never ever see you consume alcohol and they have to go down that road, which is a good thing. You know, you see different generations being more proud. They understand that they don't have to choose alcohol or any other type of addiction. They're dealing with their traumas, you know, issues at a younger age. So, you know, I'm hopeful. And then, you know, and it just builds into more like our culture behind it. You know, it's easier for them to go out on the land. It's not something that you've been told that you need to go out on the land. They know the connection to the land and their culture and their songs and their language, you know. So it all builds up on that. And then every generation receives that. You know, five generations down the road, they'll be phenomenal, I think.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
What is something that you wish everyone knew about addiction?
I just wish that the controlling part, once it starts controlling you, I hope people would know, or that light bulb moment when you do wake up from a, you know, a weekend bender, that they could choose not to. And that'll be all right too, you know. So that once you lose control, because you go down that road of alcohol, you will lose control. And I hope that they see it sooner than later.
What are you most grateful for in your sobriety?
I feel good at the end of the day. I keep busy with things that I enjoy. I enjoy a lot of sewing, lots of arts, crafts. You see things differently. Even the when the sun comes over the mountain, you appreciate things more. And it's those little things that you see without blinders on. And I enjoy my children, you know, and they notice, because they've never ever seen me drink. They sometimes think about it. You know, I've never seen you drink, you know, and that's that. You appreciate little things like that, or when elders notice it, and it's not by words, it's just by, they trust you more. You got more caring, more reliable to your friends and community, I think.
Thank you so much for being here today, Debbie. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can get help by calling the Yukon Government Mental Wellness and Substance Use Services at 1-866-456-3838, or by reaching out to Theki Anate Fly Like an Eagle program at 867-333-2497. If you would like to share your story on this podcast, please email recoverystoriesyukon@gmail.com.